वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 10 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड प्रहलाद द बेस्ट अमंग एक्सॉल्टेड डिवोटीज। सो वी हैव द वर्स हियर। सो दिस इज द कंक्लूजन ऑफ द प्रेयर्स दैट प्रहलाद महाराज ऑफर्स द सेकंड टाइम टू लॉर्ड नरसिंहदेव। इन 9 चैप्टर फर्स्ट सेट ऑफ प्रेयर्स इज ऑफर्ड, then Lord Narasimhadev speaks something, and then 10th chapter again Prahlad Maharaj speaks something. So this is the conclusion of his prayers. This is a prayer offering obeisances. Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam पुरुषाय महात्मने हरये अद्भुत सिंहाय ब्रह्मणे परमात्मने ओम नमो भगवते तुभ्यं प्रभुपाद। ओ माय लॉर्ड फुल ऑफ सिक्स ऑपुलेंसेस, ओ सुप्रीम पर्सन, ओ सुप्रीम सोल किलर ऑफ ऑल मिजरीज, ओ सुप्रीम पर्सन इन द फॉर्म ऑफ अ वंडरफुल लॉयन एंड मैन, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport: in the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj has explained that a devotee can achieve the platform of Bhagavatva, being as good as the Supreme Person. But this does not mean that a devotee loses his position as a servant. A pure servant of the Lord, although as opulent as the Lord, is still meant to offer respectful obeisances to the Lord in service. Prahlad Maharaj was engaged in pacifying the Lord, and therefore he did not consider himself equal to the Lord. He defined his position as a servant and offered respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Narasimhadev ki jai. It's not visible? Okay. Are the verses visible if you have to recite them? Are they visible behind? Okay, fine. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Ye
Hare Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Pravachan ka anuvad Hindi.
Hare Krishna. So I feel very privileged to be amongst all of you after a long time, and I seek the blessings of all of you, especially all the senior Vaishnavas here, so that I can speak something about the glories of Lord Narasimhadev. So I'll be speaking this in two main parts. First, I will speak about the position of the Prahlad Maharaj Narasimhadev pastime within the overall flow of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then I'll focus on the 9th and 10th chapter of the 7th canto, prayers by Prahlad Maharaj. And we'll see how many of the prayers we can cover. And in the evening, I'll take the full pastime. The Srimad Bhagavatam is practically the only book in world scriptures and even world literature in general which talks about how a person should face death. So, even if we look at the other Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is distinctive because it focuses on transcending the world. And the message that the Srimad Bhagavatam gives ultimately is that love is the highest reality. That love is the highest reality. Everything in this world will perish, but love alone will survive. Of course, before that, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us to redefine our understanding of what is love. But it helps us understand how, when the person who was the most influential and powerful in the world suddenly in one moment lost everything, and still he gained greater than everything. He gained the Supreme Lord, who is the source of everything. So that is the starting point of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the cursing and the subsequent being blessed of Parikshit Maharaj. And essentially all the stories that are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam have this theme of how love, when it is directed to the Supreme Lord, triumphs over all adversities. And actually, as the Srimad Bhagavatam progresses, we have the most unlikeliest of lovers. What do you mean by unlikeliest of lovers? The Lord comes in a most extraordinary form, and the devotee is often quite extraordinary. And after, for example, now, here if we look at it, the Lord is in a ferocious half-man, half-lion form. And the devotee is just a tender five-year-old boy. And if we look at it just before this canto, you know, the normal understanding is that Krishna says, Dvo bhuta sargav lokesmin daiva asuraye vacha, that there are two kinds of living beings, there are the divine and the demoniac. And the demoniac go downwards, the divine go upwards. So in the hierarchy, the demoniac are lower, the divine are higher. But the Bhagavatam turns this hierarchy upside down. It says that actually the conventional hierarchy is superseded by the power of bhakti. So if somebody has bhakti, then the person may be born in a demoniac family, but he is far greater than somebody who is born in a divine or a demigod family. And if you look at the 6th, 7th and 8th cantos, we look at the heroes of these three cantos. There are multiple heroes, but we have Rudrasura in the 6th canto, Prahlad in the 7th canto, and Bali Maharaj in the 8th canto. And all three of them are demons. All three of them are demons. So what is the Bhagavatam actually doing? See, we start off from our material conception of love between man and woman, and Bhagavatam takes us all around, and you know, all kinds of, here is Vritrasura, it is described, if we read his appearance, he looks like the antithesis of a devotee. Oh yes, looking very ferocious and frightening. In fact, the name Vritrasura means Vritra, one who covers all of space. And you know, he's trampling the enemies under his feet, just tossing them aside. And as he looks so ferocious, and suddenly he speaks the tenderest of emotions. Ajata pakshaiva mataram khaga stanyam yatha vatsatara kshudartha priyam priyaiva vyushitam vishanna manorvindaksha didrukshate twam. Didrukshate twam, he's telling, look at the three metaphors that he's giving. Ajata pakshaiva mataram khaga. He says, just as a bird who has not yet developed his wings, such a bird cannot live on itself because it does not have any way to get food. So it's longing for the mother bird to come and give food. So if you visualize this, it's such a tender conception. And think of this coming from the mouth of a ferocious demon. Now the sight of whom is making his enemies fall unconscious. So the Bhagavatam tells us that no matter how a person looks externally, underneath is there a heart that longs for love. And that heart is the essence of the person. So he is telling, ajata pakshaiva mataram, just as a small bird which has not yet developed its wings longs for his mother to come. The second is equally tender. Stanyam yatha vatsatara kshudartha. Just as a calf longs for his mother cow so that he can get milk. And then, from coming from nature, from the birds to the cows, now he comes to the priyam priyaiva vyushitam vishanna. That just as a lover longs for the return of the beloved, he says, mano arvindaksha didrukshate twam. My dear Lord, I long to see you, I long to serve you. So, here there is this ferocious looking demon, and he has such a tender heart. And then in the next canto, here there is such a small boy, practically speaking. He is, you know, a small boy, we would not expect much philosophy, much wisdom, just playfulness. But he is expressing the profoundest of philosophy. And he says, Sushandina Marka, I am helpless. Krishna graha grihitatma. Actually, my heart is attracted by Krishna. I cannot help it. And here, so actually speaking, in the Vritrasura pastime, Krishna doesn't make a direct appearance. Krishna is only in the heart of Uttarasura. Of course, that is not only, that is a lot to have the Lord present in the heart. But he is not making his manifest appearance over there. But here, if we see, Prahlad is a tender boy, but the Lord is so ferocious. Naham bibhemya jitate ati bhayanakasya jivark bhrukuti rabhaso gritam strad antras rajakshatajakeshara shanku karanan nirad bhita digibadari binnakagrad. So he's describing the form of the Lord. Now he's telling everybody is running away in fear. But naham bibhemya. So why is everybody running away in fear? Again the same point. Irrespective of how anyone appears, underneath there is a heart that loves and longs for love. And that applies even to the Supreme Lord when he comes. So he's telling, my dear Lord, what is your appearance? He actually describes the ferocious appearance and he says, I am not afraid. Because he's able to see to the heart of the Lord. Naham bibhemya jitate ati bhayanakasya. Extremely horrible. Bhayanakasya. Jivvarka bhrukuti rabhaso gradamishrat. So actually this form of Ugra Narasimha that we are seeing, this is not yet manifesting the full anger. The anger is there in the heart, but the Ugra Narasimha, the Lord is just coming out of the pillar. So when he jumps out of the pillar, then his anger gets expressed, both in his face as well as in the actions. So he says, what is that? Jivvarka bhrukuti. Jivva. So his tongue is moving like a sword, as if it is going to slash everyone. Arka bhrukuti rabhaso gradamishrat. So eyes are burning like the sun. And describe his eyes were so ferocious that the luminous object in the sky appeared to be pale in comparison. In the sun's effulgence was nothing. Bhrukuti rabhaso gradamishrat. Bhrukuti is frowning. You know, if somebody looks fear, that's bad enough. But he's frowning, that's frightening. So Bhrukuti is frowning angrily. Rabhaso gradamishrat. On top of that, he has this ferocious teeth coming out. And as if that were not enough, antrahas rajaha, he's wearing a garland. And what is the garland? It's the intestines. Can you imagine? This is something which people would think, is this a monster from a horror movie? You know, but actually, something entirely transcendent. So Bhagavatam forces us to revise our conceptions of what is religion, what is love, and what is the Lord, most importantly. So, antras rajaha is having a garland of intestine of Hiranyakashipu. Shatajakeshara shanku karanan. Shatajakeshara, his hair, is filled with the drops of blood from the body of Hiranyakashipu. Shanku karanan, and his hair is also erect. That is also a sign of fierceness. And then, he's roaring so fiercely. Nirhad bhit digibhadar bhinna khagrat. He's just by hearing the roar that is emanating from his throat, the elephants are fleeing away in fear. Normally the elephants are attracted. Who's a lion who wants to challenge us? But here there is no challenge only. They just flee away. Arbhinna khagrat. And those who come in front of him, just arbin, by his, it is not even using the word nails, nakat agrat. Just by the tip of the nails, they are enough. It's ripping everyone apart. So this is actually the Supreme Lord. And then, if you think about it, you know, what is the similarity between this Lord and the Lord we have over here? Sorry, we'll come to this. So, this is the same person, but entirely different. You know, the gopis, when they are attracted to Krishna, they feel that Krishna is so tender that actually even the softest parts of their body will hurt him. So, the same Lord who here we see is Chukujavenu. So if you look at the contrast, there the Lord is roaring in anger. And here that same Lord is playing a flute. Chukujavenu, the Bhagavatam describes, as he's attracting the devotees to them. that same Lord who has got ferocious eyes, which are making the illumination of the sun seem insignificant, here, actually, the Lord has Padmapatra Vishalaksham. He has lotus-like eyes. Now, Narasimha Dev is not described as like having lotus-like eyes. His eyes are compared to the sun, because they are just torches which penetrate into the hearts of the enemy, striking terror over there just by their sight. So, then if we see, what is the overall appearance? You know, if we see Krishna's ears, they are not Chankukaranan. They are not, you know, if generally, actually in the Kama Shastra is described how the features of a person determine what that can give an indication of what the character of a person is. So if the hair are very straight and erect, then that indicates the person is also very strict. So actually speaking, Krishna is the embodiment of tenderness and softness. And it is the same Lord. So before we come to Krishna, we have in the ninth canto, what do we have? We have Bali Maharaj. So Vritrasura was a king who lost his life, but he gained Krishna. Prahlad, who had Krishna, and for the sake of Krishna, he nearly lost his life. But here, Bali Maharaj, he had everything, and then Krishna comes as a brahmachari. So here, if we see there, Prahlad is a small boy, but here, Bali Maharaj becomes like a small boy, a bal brahmachari. Vamande becomes like a small brahmachari, and he comes, and what does he do? Actually, a brahmana is supposed to be very upright and honest, and here brahmana comes and steals everything. Oh, and what is Bali Maharaj's reaction? He says, my dear Lord, nobody can be as merciful as you. And Bali Maharaj's reaction is so extraordinary. He says, my dear Lord, you know, I only tried to offer obeisances to you. And just by trying to offer obeisances to you, you have blessed me so profusely. What is the blessing? The Lord became his doorkeeper. The Lord became his eternal associate. So after charting such extraordinary experiences, instances of love, the Bhagavatam returns to a setting which is entirely human-like and entirely not human-like. That is the love of Krishna with the gopis. So, what is the Bhagavatam doing? It's not for nothing that Srila Prabhupada tells us that we should not read the 10th canto before completing the 9 cantos. The 9 cantos help us understand that the love of Krishna and the devotee exists in an entirely different dimension. And then when we come to the love of Krishna and the gopis, even if it appears very similar to ours, very, very similar to mundane, it is not. And the Bhagavatam prefaces this also with a very significant verse right in the 10th canto, 29th chapter, when it starts, Yoga Maya Mupashritaha. That Supreme Lord took shelter of Yoga Maya. Now, the previous 9 cantos have described how everything else is Ashrit and the Supreme Lord is Ashraya. But Shukdev Goswami tells us that something extraordinary is happening over here, that the Ashraya of all is becoming Ashrit of something. And what is he becoming Ashrit of? Yoga Maya Mupashritaha. Now, the word Yoga Maya, if we do not know the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy of there being an internal energy of the Lord, the word Yoga Maya is very peculiar. It is in English called as oxymoron. Oxymoron means a word which has two opposite meanings within one. If I say somebody is an intelligent idiot, what does it mean? How can somebody be intelligent and be an idiot, isn't it? Or somebody is a courageous coward. How can somebody be courageous and cowardly? So actually, Yoga Maya, if you see, the purpose of yoga is to come out of Maya. Isn't it? Maya is that which makes us forget Krishna. And yoga is that which helps us to reconnect with Krishna. So, the word Yoga Maya, if somebody is not familiar with Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, it sort of intellectually psychs out a person. What is this? What is Yoga Maya? So basically the Bhagavatam is prefacing its highest revelation, what the Padma Purana calls the smile on the face of Krishna. Padma Purana compares the 12 cantos to the body of Krishna. The tenth canto is the face, and the Ras Panchadhyay is like the smile of Krishna. So it prefaces the description of the smile of Krishna by telling us something extraordinary, for which, to understand which, we have to put behind all our preconceptions. So we were practicing yoga to come out of Maya, but here there is Yoga Maya. So what is this Yoga Maya? So normally Maya makes us forget Krishna, and yoga is meant to remind us of Krishna. But Yoga Maya, it connects us with Krishna and it disconnects us with Krishna. It does both. How? It connects us with the person Krishna and it disconnects us with the God Krishna. The gopis are not aware that Krishna is God. So Yoga Maya is that energy which makes us Krishna conscious but not God conscious. We are conscious of Krishna but not conscious of God, because we are not conscious that Krishna is God. So, especially this is evident in the gopis' pastimes, come primarily in three sections in the 10th canto. We'll come back to 7th canto, but that is the culmination, and then gradually I will discuss, as we are going through Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, how the culmination of the Bhagavatam is being hinted in Prahlad Maharaj's prayers also. So the gopis' pastimes come in three places in the 10th canto. One is 29 to 33, then there is 46, 47 is Uddhav Sandesh. And then 82, 83, in the 10th canto chapters, they talk about Kurukshetra Punarmilan. So, at that time, when Krishna meets the gopis once again, Krishna tells the gopis that, you know, I am feeling so much agony because of separation from you. But what can I do? It is the will of providence. And everybody is moved by providence. And all of us are helpless puppets. Now, Krishna is providence. But the gopis are Krishna conscious, not God conscious. So the gopis don't say, Krishna, you are providence. It is your will that has separated us. They accept Krishna, it is will of providence. When will we meet again? So, actually what the Bhagavatam illustrates is, love that exists only for the sake of love, not for the sake of Godhood. The gopis love Krishna not because he is God, but because he is such a lovable person. And here we will see the same spirit coming up in Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, that normally people approach God because God will give them something wonderful. And when such an attitude is there, the awareness that God is very great and very wonderful, very powerful, and most importantly very wealthy, that is very much there in the awareness of the person. But here we see Prahlad Maharaj, for God's sake, he gives up everything. He, for God's sake, he refuses to become the heir of the property of the whole universe that he was as the son of Hiranyakashipu. So, far from God giving him anything, because of his God's devotion to God, he risks losing everything. And on top of that, he risks losing even his own life. And even after all that, when the Lord comes and says, I am very pleased with you, Prahlad, please ask for something. He says, I am not a businessman, my dear Lord. Why should I ask you from anything? So actually the Bhagavatam talks about the purity of that love. Now if you see, the Lord is so pleased with Prahlad Maharaj. He says, please ask something, and we'll discuss. Beautiful conversations are there between Prahlad and Narasimhadev. But finally Prahlad asks for what? He says, please deliver my father. But here still, although Prahlad Maharaj's love is extraordinary, but still Prahlad Maharaj's bhakti does not evoke the response that the gopis' bhakti evokes from Krishna. And Krishna doesn't tell the gopis, ask for some benediction. What does he say? I cannot offer you anything. Na paraye aham. I cannot repay you. So here God is still, Narasimhadev is still in the position of God, and he is saying, I will offer you benedictions. Please ask something. Prahlad's devotion is so great that I won't want to ask anything. But actually the gopi's devotion is so great and it conquers Krishna's heart so completely that Krishna feels, what to speak of giving any benediction? See, actually there are different levels of interaction. Benediction means that person actually doesn't deserve it. We give it as a favor to that person. That's the meaning of blessing or mercy. So Krishna is telling, I will give benediction to Prahlad. But for then below this benedictory relationship is a business relationship. You give something and I'll give something back. And below that is a loan, where I take something and I don't give it back. So Krishna is telling, I have taken your love and I can't repay your love. Naparayeham. So actually, the relationship between the Krishna and the gopis is the antithesis of the normal relationship between the devotee and the Lord. In the sense that the devotee normally says to the Lord, my dear Lord, you have done so much for me, I can't repay you. Krishna is telling the gopis, you have done so much for me, I can't repay you. So it is something very extraordinary. And the Bhagavatam is taking us towards that conclusion. That incredible demonstration of the pinnacle of love. That is what the Bhagavatam is going to display in the 10th canto. But it prepares our heart and our head for that supreme message of love, pastime of love being demonstrated here in the Prahlad Maharaj, 7th canto pastime. And in the 7th canto, the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj starts from the first chapter. And Lord Narasimhadeva appears in the 8th chapter. And he kills Hiranyakashipu. And in the 9th chapter, Prahlad Maharaj is about to offer prayers. So when Prahlad Maharaj is about to offer prayers, at that time we know the background that all the other demigods, they offer prayers. How it is, Prahlad Maharaj's prayer go for 43 verses. But all the other demigods' prayer are only 1, 2 or 3 verses. Why is that? Actually, they are also eloquent enough to offer long prayers. But what they see is, just like if somebody is very angry and you try to pacify him, then you feel that he is not getting pacified, then we just beat a hasty retreat. So it is like that. I don't want to be the blast of that anger. So all the demigods give it a try. You know, starting from Brahma, Shiva, the Gandharvas, the Kinnaras, the Manus, all of them give it a try. You know, they try to offer prayers. But they offer 1 verse, 2 verse, they see that the anger is not going away only. They feel, we don't want to be, you know, in his attention. Because he's so angry. So they just beat a hasty retreat. And then, it is described that Brahmaji requests Lakshmi Devi to come. And Lakshmi Devi says, I have never seen my Lord like this. In fact, what she says is this really my Lord? I don't know. So actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his purport describes that Narasimha Dev appears in every kalpa. And Lakshmi Devi was there in the previous kalpa also. And Narasimha Dev is there eternally in the spiritual world. And Lakshmi Devi is eternal consort. But the power of Yoga Maya covers even Lakshmi Devi. Although Lakshmi Devi is herself Yoga Maya in one sense. But for enhancing the rasa, Lakshmi Devi is covered by Yoga Maya. And what happens is, she feels, I have never seen my Lord. So every pastime has a particular focus. And the focus of the Narasimha Leela is to reveal the exaltedness of the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj. And that is why all the devatas and even Lakshmi Devi take a sort of backward role. And even Prahlad Maharaj's guru, Narad Muni, takes a backward role. So it's interesting, you know, normally the disciple speaks the pastimes of the spiritual master, isn't it? My spiritual master does like this, my spiritual master does like that. But here, the spiritual master is speaking the pastime of the disciple. Isn't it? We know what is the conversation. Yudhishthir Maharaj is asking Narad Muni, how is it that Shishupal, when he died, when he was blaspheming Krishna, how is it that leprosy did not befall his face? How did it that his tongue did not break apart when he was blaspheming Krishna like that? And while explaining how Jaya and Vijaya were cursed, what is Narad Muni doing? Narad Muni is describing the pastimes of his disciple. And Narad Muni is so humble, within the pastime, he is also describing, actually Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that even I had to offer obeisances to him. So, you know, Narad Muni himself is telling that. So actually, when there is the intoxication of love, then there is no question of mundane honor or mundane dishonor. So Narad Muni is not thinking, I am a saint, what will Yudhishthir think of me if I tell him that I was bowing down to Hiranyakashipu? He is just that one focus. What is that? To reveal to the world the glory of the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj. So of course, Prahlad Maharaj is always very conscious of the glory of his spiritual master. But here, Narad Muni is describing in a way that singularly demonstrates the extraordinary loftiness of the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj. So then Prahlad Maharaj goes forward. And as soon as Lord Narasimhadev sees Prahlad Maharaj, he becomes pacified. Not just pacified, he becomes delighted. You know, that's as radical a transformation of emotion as can happen. If somebody's angry, that person just cools down and will be happy. But somebody's angry at one moment, next moment just starts smiling broadly. How can that happen? So actually, that is the power of the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj and the emotion of love that is evoked when Prahlad Maharaj appears in front of the Lord. So now we know that Krishna, that Narasimhadev was angry because Prahlad Maharaj was in danger. So Hiranyakashipu came with a sword to kill Prahlad Maharaj, and Narasimhadev was so angry that you dare to hurt my devotee. You know, the devotee is so precious, not only for the Lord, but even for the demigods. You know, we see that when Jad Bharat was being threatened, what happened was, from the deity form, Kali erupted. And she killed all the bandits who were about to kill Jad Bharat. So, even the demigods know how beloved a devotee is for the Lord. And even they want to protect. So, how much will be the love of the Lord? So, Lord is so angry. And now Hiranyakashipu is dead. Why is the Lord still angry? The demigods are actually offering prayer. Still the Lord stays angry. Why is that? The Lord is angry not just with Hiranyakashipu but also with the demigods. He says, when my devotee was being tortured and threatened to be killed, why did you neither protect nor protest? You did not come to protect him, nor did you protest. You just passively watched. And now you are offering prayers. What is your love for me? So, Lord Narasimhadev's love is so great. You know, if a father loves one particular son very much, then what happens? If that son is in danger and the other brothers don't go to help that son, then what happens is, the father is angry not only with whoever is threatening that son, but all the other brothers also. Why did you not protect him? So, it is like that. So, Lord Narasimhadev is angry with the Devatas also. And then finally when Prahlad Maharaj comes, and Prahlad Maharaj pacifies the Lord, at that time, the Lord becomes not only pacified, but delighted. And, you know, Prahlad Maharaj offers obeisances in front of Lord Narasimhadev. And then, Lord Narasimhadev places his hand on Prahlad Maharaj. And he places his hand on Prahlad Maharaj. And it is described that all material contamination went away. Now, Prahlad Maharaj had no material contamination. If he had any material contamination, then he would not have been able to resist the temptations and threats of his father. So actually, what happens is, the sparsha of the Lord made the devotion overflow out of his heart. And what was the contamination? There was no contamination. Whatever little contamination might have been there, because of his being born in a demoniac family, that also went away entirely. And then Prahlad Maharaj starts offering prayers. So now, normally speaking, in the material world, emotions are obstacles to perception. For example, if I am observing something, and if I am very unhappy or I am very angry, then I can't think properly, I can't see properly. Emotions are obstacles to perception. But in bhakti, when it comes to Krishna, emotions, far from being the obstacles to perception, emotions are the pathways to perception. Emotions are the way by which we perceive. Why? Because there are two different kinds of objects. There are analytical objects and there are aesthetic objects. If I have a mathematical diagram, if I am observing that, then emotions are of no use for me. I have to just put aside all my emotions and think, what is this? That's an object to be analyzed. But if there is a beautiful painting or say an artistic rose, if that rose, that aesthetic object, does not evoke any emotions, then there is no appreciation of the aesthetics. You know, if I start analyzing a beautiful rose, then I am not an artist, I become a botanist. Isn't it? So, there are objects to be analyzed and there are objects to be relished. The analytical objects and aesthetic objects. So, the Bhagavatam reveals the absolute truth not as an analytical object but as an aesthetic object. That's why, what does it say in 1.1.3? Pibhata Bhagavatam rasamalayam muhuravo bhavika vibhavuka. So, rasika, you become a rasik and drink the rasa. So, it is not saying analyze. The analysis has already been done in Vedanta Sutra. And Vyasadeva has found the analysis not satisfied him. So, now he is not going to do any analysis. Now, he is going to relish. And while relishing, as icing on the cake, there might be some analysis. But the primary mode of connecting with the Bhagavatam is through the heart, not through the head. And whenever there are aesthetic objects, if there are no emotions, then there is no appreciation. If there is a beautiful painting, if the painting doesn't evoke any emotions, then there is no appreciation of that. So actually, when it comes to Krishna, if we want to appreciate Krishna, His beauty, His glory, then there has to be emotions. And greater the emotions, greater the appreciation. That's why, if we look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, many of the highest revelations of Krishna's beauty and Krishna's glory come not in the mode of dispassionate analysis, but in the prayers of the devotees to the Lord. When the devotees are offering prayers, at that time, actually, the most intimate and heart-rending picture of Krishna is revealed. And this happens most exquisitely in 10.31, in the Gopi Gita. The gopis, throughout the whole 10th canto, is devoted to Krishna, the person Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna. But the most intimate and attractive picture of Krishna is depicted in a play, in a chapter where Krishna is not present at all. Krishna is not present, he's not doing any action. But he's doing all the action in the heart of his devotee. And that action that is happening in the heart of his devotee is being expressed as the prayers of the devotee. So, actually speaking, we may see the prayers as very abstract and philosophical. Some of us may find the Vaishnava songs which are given by our Vaishnava Acharyas seem to be more devotional. They seem to contain more devotion and they evoke more devotion in our hearts. But actually, even the Bhagavatam prayers are permeated with devotion. Often we don't appreciate that because the Sanskrit language and they are actually clothed in the language of philosophy. They are emotions clothed, dressed in the language of philosophy. And we just see the dress and we don't see the essence. And that's why sometimes we get intimidated. These prayers are so difficult, so philosophical. So, let us now look at some of the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So, Prahlad Maharaj offers 43 prayers in the 9th chapter. Then again, he offers 9 prayers in the 10th chapter. And then, again, he offers 3 prayers in, so 2nd to 10th verses in the 10th chapter. And then, 15, 16, 17 verses in the 10th chapter, he offers a prayer. That is where he requests Prahlad Narsardhadev, please deliver my father. And then Narsimhadev gives him instructions. So Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita. There is no Narsimhadev give philosophical instruction. Because Narsimhadev is not in the mood of philosophy. He's in the mood of action over there. But still, he speaks some philosophy too. Of how a devotee should be and how a devotee should live in the world. So that comes after the 10th. So 11th through 14th verses. And then 18th through 24 verses. In the 10th chapter, Narsimhadev describes how a devotee should be. In one sense, he is telling, not Prahlad Maharaj, you should be like this. He says, you are already like this. And everybody should aspire to become like this. So I have some of the verses here. That's why we have this projector. So we'll recite some of the verses. And we'll discuss. So this is the starting prayer. It starts from 8 and it goes on till 15. So we'll look at the overall flow of prayers and we'll just recite a few of them. So I have both the Devanagari and English, so whatever you prefer, we can use. I'll just move this down. So, Shri Prahalad Uvacha. Brahmadaya Suragana Munayotha Siddha. Sattvaikatam Gatayo Vachisam Pravahai. Naraditum Puruganai Radhuna Pipipru. Kim Toshtu Marhati Same Harirugra Jate. So Prahlad Maharaj starts his prayer with extraordinary humility. See, actually, Prahlad Maharaj, although he may be a demon, born in a demoniac family, and demons are also considered kshatriyas, devatas are also considered kshatriyas. But it's like, say, try to visualize the situation, if there is a swayamvar or something like that, all other contestants have failed. And then one particular contestant comes and succeeds. And obviously the feeling is, I am better than all of you. And I have succeeded. So, this is not exactly a swayamvar, but it's similar. You know, everybody else has failed and Prahlad Maharaj alone has succeeded. And how does he start? He starts not with his glory, he starts with his own disqualification. Brahma Daya Suragana Munayota Siddha. He says, all these people who, Brahma and other devatas and the Munis and the Siddhas, they all offered prayers to you, my dear Lord. And what were the nature of the prayers? First of all, he talks about them and he talks about what they spoke. Sattvaikatam, they're all situated in the mode of goodness. And then he will contrast himself with him. Vachisam Pravahai. And what they spoke was a flow of words glorifying you. Vishwanatha Thakur says that actually the words that they spoke were like a Ganga. Clear, pure, delicious. So, Vachisam Pravahai. And this is Naradhitum. You were not worshipped. You were not satisfied by that. Puru Ganair. So many of them offered before. Adhuna Pipipru Kim Toshtum. Then how is it possible for me to satisfy you, my dear Lord? Arhati Sameh Ugrajate. Ugrajate. I was born in a demoniac family. How can I satisfy you? So actually material life means that we parade our qualifications. Isn't it? Especially if we are in a competitive world where everybody has to, if they want to get a job, they have to give you their own CV. And the CV is basically, you know, expanding one's glories as much as is possible. Isn't it? One tries to give the most aggressive and attractive portrayal of oneself and one's accomplishments. But that doesn't attract Krishna. What attracts Krishna is actually awareness of our shortcomings. Not that we focus on our shortcomings and we become conscious of our shortcomings. We be conscious of Krishna. But when we are aware of whatever our shortcomings are, then that humility attracts Krishna. Why? It's not that Krishna doesn't... It's not that Krishna... Krishna has some aversion to people knowing about their own glories. The point is, when we think about our own glories, our thoughts become dominated by ourselves. So it's a devotee, if the Krishna has given some strength to a devotee is aware of that. But he doesn't let that dominate his thoughts. Now, if we have some talents, we have to use them in Krishna's service and we have to be aware of them. But that doesn't dominate the person's thoughts. And especially when we are approaching the Lord, then when we are aware of our deficiencies, we feel a sense of inadequacy, a sense of incompleteness. And that sense of incompleteness allows the Lord to enter into our heart. When we are thinking of our strengths and qualifications, then that fills our hearts and we think that, you know, I can help others. And we think, I don't need really Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying that, Ugra jate hai. So first is, I am not qualified. So actually, the whole purpose of Prahlad Maharaj's prayers is to glorify bhakti. And when we see the last prayer that will come, what is he saying? Arattamate nama. He says that, my dear Lord, please give bhakti to everyone. That is the 50th prayer. So the whole mood of a devotee is to not, even if he is glorious, he doesn't think that I am glorious. He thinks that the path of bhakti is glorious. And so that is how the thought flow will go. He says, actually I am unqualified. And then the next verse, what is the theme? The same theme of the Bhagavatam as what I said earlier. Bhakti inverts the normal hierarchies. So first thing he will say is that, my dear Lord, what is the possibility for me to satisfy you? I am not in Sattvaguna, I am born in low God family, low family. Then he says, my dear Lord, you are not satisfied with anything except bhakti. That's the next verse. Manye. So actually I am reciting in a particular way. If you can also recite in that way, that will be resonating nicely. Manye dhana bhijan rupa tapah shrutau jas. Teja prabhava bal paurusha buddhi yoga. Naradhanaya hi bhavanti parasya pumso. Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gajayuthapaya. So he says, he gives a long list of material qualifications. Manya, I think, dhana, abhijan, rupa, tapah, shutaujas. He says, all these things cannot satisfy you, my dear Lord. Wealth cannot satisfy you, learning cannot satisfy you, austerity cannot satisfy you. And what satisfies you? Bhaktya tuto. You are satisfied only by bhakti. Nothing else. And he used the example of Gajayuthapaya. That of Gajendra. Now Gajendra is going to come in the 8th canto. How is Prahlad speaking about him in 7th canto? Actually these pastimes are happening in every yuga. And Prahlad Maharaj knows about these pastimes. So he's speaking about them. And then, now he goes on this, he addresses this contrast further in an even more dramatic way in the next verse. He says, the absence of bhakti, the next verse theme is what? The absence of bhakti makes the qualified unqualified. And the presence of bhakti makes the unqualified qualified. So this is a famous verse. And this verse was used even by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in his debate about Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. And Srila Prabhupada quotes one of the purport of this verse, one of the most beautiful purports in this section by Srila Prabhupada. So, Viprad Vishad Gunayutad Arvindanabha. Pada Ravinda Vimukhat Swapacham Varishtam. Manye Tadarpit Mano Vachine Hitartha. Pranam Punati Sakulam Natubhuri Manaha. So, Sanskrit is such a beautiful language that sometimes the sound of the words gives the idea of the meaning. So, Bhuri Manaha. Bhuri Mana means arrogant person. So, actually, it says if a Brahmana is proud, then Brahmana becomes lower than a dog eater. The Brahmana is averse to Krishna's lotus feet. And Prabhupada talks about how, you know, he says about one of my disciples, when his mother was about to die, at her last moment, she inquired about Krishna. She talked about Krishna. And by remembering Krishna thus, she attained an auspicious destination. So, he says, he's giving this example of how a devotee delivers his dependence also. And His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj is currently writing a book. He's writing two books, in fact, about death. One book is about to be published called Many, Many Moons. So Prabhupada said that Ekas Chandrasta Mohanti Nachatarah Sahasrasha. So only, even if I get one moon is better than many stars. And he says, Prabhupada said at one time, you know, Krishna is so kind that I would have been satisfied with one moon, but He has given me many, many moons. So he's, in this book, Giriraj Maharaj has compiled the stories of all the several of the leading devotees who left their bodies in Krishna consciousness. Very beautiful book. And then our second book he's writing. This first book will be published soon. In fact, it's already published in America. So when Maharaj comes to India, he will bring the book with him. So I had the fortune of editing both the books. So in the second book, he's talking about death and dying within the Vedic tradition. And in that he describes about how ISKCON has now set up a hospice in Bhaktivedanta hospice in Vrindavan, where devotees can leave their bodies in Vraja, in Krishna consciousness. And it describes how many people actually left their bodies in very, very exemplary ways. So, actually we can see devotees are delivering, are being delivered in the association of devotees, and devotees are, there are even stories of devotees' relatives coming there and leaving their bodies in extraordinary consciousness. So, the fact of Krishna consciousness goes beyond all institutional upheavals. Now, there may be ups and downs wherever we are at the material level. But the principle of Krishna consciousness remains an underlying reality. And whoever remembers Krishna, Krishna delivers that person. So now somebody may think that, oh Lord, you are satisfied by bhakti and if a low born person has bhakti, he is great. Then is Prahlad thinking that I have bhakti? You know, to sing I have bhakti, isn't that also a sign of pride? Let us see what is Prahlad Maharaj's mood. So before that, he takes another angle. So he'll talk about bhakti a little later. What he says is, so if you are, my dear Lord, if you are not satisfied by austerity, you are not satisfied by knowledge, and you are satisfied only by bhakti, and what does bhakti involve? Bhakti involves glorifying you. So if bhakti involves glorifying you, that would mean, you know, are you an egomaniac? You know, you want everyone to glorify you? No, there's one Western scholar who studied the Bhagavad Gita. He said, it's Krishna. I never seen such an arrogant conception of God. You know, he's saying, I am the best of everything. No, actually, 10th chapter, 41st, 42nd verse, what does Krishna say? Actually, he says, I am the king among animals, I am the king among the gods, this. And then he says, this list is just a glimpse, Arjuna. So it's like saying, you know, if we ask somebody, please introduce yourself. That person gives an introduction for 45 minutes. And then he says, this is just a glimpse. We may say, what arrogance is it? So, Krishna says, this is only a glimpse. And what is the general principle? General principle is, whatever is beautiful gets its beauty from me. This is too much, isn't it? So, how is it possible that God can be bragging about his glory? Shouldn't God be a bit humble? So, actually speaking, if we look at the setting of the Bhagavad Gita, we will see God taking the most extraordinarily humble position. What is he? He's a charioteer. So if actions speak louder than words, look at the actions of Krishna. Isn't it? What are the actions showing? That he's a servant of his devotee. And what kind of servant? Just a charioteer. Charioteer is like a chauffeur. And then on top of that, actually Krishna expresses humility in another way in the Bhagavad Gita. What does he do? You know, Krishna also realizes that. Krishna is also a person. And as a person, he doesn't like to speak his glories too much. So that's why several places, Krishna refers to himself in the third person. Third person means, for example, 18.61, Krishna is saying that Supreme Lord is directing the wandering of all living beings. Ishvara Sarva Bhutana. Riddeshi Arjuna Shishtati. Then 18.62 he says, Tameva Sharanam Gacha Sarva Bhavena Bharata Tat Prasada Param Shantim Sthanam Prapsasi Shashvatam. So he says, surrender unto that Lord. And if you are surrendered to that Lord, you will get the supreme peace and the ultimate destination. So, Krishna refers to himself in the third person. This is one way of expressing humility. How does that express humility? You know, when the devotees wanted to make a palace of gold in Vrindavan, in New Vrindavan, so they said, Prabhupada, we want to make a palace for you. Prabhupada said, there's no need for a palace for me. Then, the devotees were disappointed. They wanted to offer that service to Srila Prabhupada. Then they went back and said, Prabhupada, we want to make a palace for the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, make it. So now, what? Now is this hypocrisy? It's not hypocrisy. It's actually, you know, when Prabhupada is thinking of the spiritual master, he's not thinking of himself as the spiritual master. He's thinking of his spiritual master. And he's thinking that the spiritual master is a post that deserves respect. So then Prabhupada allowed them to make it like that. So Prabhupada here showed that actually, yes, make it for the spiritual master. Who is the spiritual master? It's you only. But that difference, that reference in third person, Prabhupada accepts the loving offering, but at the same time expresses his devotion, expresses his humility also. So like that, Krishna doesn't want to say, come and surrender to me. So he says, Tameva Sharanam Gacha. Right? Surrender to that Supreme Lord. But then, after this what happens? Krishna tells Arjuna in 18.63, now, Arjuna, you decide what you want to do. Vimrishyaita dasheshena yathechasi tatha kuru. Now think and decide what you want to do. And at this point, Arjuna gets lost in thought. Because imagine, suppose a big philosophical conversation is going on. And, you know, there is no indication, if you look backward, that Krishna is not giving, like, you know, when the Bhagavad, when, if you have a Bhagavatam lecture going on, we know that, okay, at this time, it's going to get over. So we are mentally prepared that it's going to get over after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. But Arjuna has no mental preparation like that. The conversation is just going on and on and on. And suddenly, now, so imagine the Bhagavatam class is going on. Now you decide what you should do. What happened? Suddenly, you know, from all this philosophical contemplation, the onus comes on action. So Arjuna comes back from this abstract philosophical conception to the reality that he's on the battlefield and he has to decide what to do. So Arjuna gets lost in thought. You know, what should I do? This was said in the second chapter, that was in the fifth chapter, that was in the seventh chapter, that was in the ninth chapter. And now Krishna said, surrender to that. How do we surrender to that Lord? Where is he? What to do? So when Krishna sees that Arjuna is lost in thought, then Krishna's compassion overflows. So in 18.63, he is telling, Itite jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram maya. He says, I have given you knowledge more confidential than earlier. But he said, then he said in 18.64, now I will give you the most confidential knowledge. Sarva guhyatamam bhuya shrunume paramam vachaha ishtosime drudamiti tato vakshamite hitam. Sarva guhyatamam, most confidential knowledge I will speak to you. Shrunume paramam vachaha, supreme words. And what is that? Ishtosime drudamiti. Ishta means dear. Drudam, very strongly. So Krishna is saying, what is the most confidential message? You are strongly loved by me. Drudam means determined. I am determined to love you. We are determined to forget Krishna. And Krishna is determined to love us. Tato vakshamite hitam. Therefore, for your benefit I speak. And then Krishna is unambiguous. He makes those two verses. Manmanabhav and Sarva Dharman Parityaja. So when we see Krishna speaking about himself, there are three issues over there. There is reality, there is humility, and there is clarity. So the reality is that Krishna is the source of the beauty of everyone. The reality is that Krishna is the source of the greatness of everyone. Just like Prahlad Maharaj told Hiranyakashipu, strength of my power, the strength of your power is all the Lord Vishnu. So actually, you know, if there was anything that could have incensed Hiranyakashipu, that was this. For Hiranyakashipu, it was intolerable, the very idea that, you know, there is somebody whose strength is competitive to mine. If there is a wealthy person and he thinks that I am the wealthiest person in the world, and then somebody else says that somebody else is wealthier than you, you get very angry. Who is that person? Now, as it is for him to hear that there is somebody who is my competitor is bad enough. But then if you tell the wealthy person, actually he is not only wealthier than you, even your wealth belongs to him only. What? That's intolerable. So Hiranyakashipu gets so angry. Tvam Ishwaram Madaparo Kam Harami. He says, who, you say that there is an Ishwara who is other than me? Where is that? Now I will cut off your head. Let us see if he comes. So for Prahlad Maharaj, it is just an objective fact. But that objective fact is beyond all tolerable limit for Hiranyakashipu. You are not only saying there is a person who is equal to me, but my strength comes from him. How dare you? He's enraged. So when Krishna is saying this, actually the fact is the source of the strength of everyone is Krishna. And we may not feel it that way, but actually when we get a disease, when we get some disability, then we realize, actually, what happened to my strength? I was just not able to do anything. You know, cricket is a popular sport in India, and in cricket it happens that players are sometimes in form and sometimes out of form. Now, no batsman ever wants to be out of form. And certain batsmen may be, you are such a great batsman. There's a batsman who is called as the god of cricket. But then what happens is that god of cricket goes out of form sometimes. Isn't it? And then he realizes, actually I'm not God, isn't it? So the person may have talent, but the talent is not one's own. And the proof is that we do not always have control on the talent. No matter how good our talent is, we don't always have control on our talent. Sometimes things just work out, sometimes things don't work out. And the more people derive joy from their talent, the more is the agony when their talent doesn't seem to be in their control. You know, when a batsman who is very popular, he goes out of form, there is no agony greater than that for him. Because there he was, you know, dominating all the ballers, and here some new rookie comes up and clean bowls him. It's a total humiliation for the person. So it's the modern, so that is the modern equivalent of marana adatiruchyate. You know, for a person who is honored, dishonor is worse than death. So anyway, the point is, it's a reality that everybody's qualities come from Krishna. So first point is a reality. But still, when there is, see, Krishna differentiates between amanitvam and adambitvam. When he talks about 13th chapter, he talks about knowledge, 8th verse. So amanitvam means humility. Humility is when we have good qualities, but still we don't speak about them. And dambha is arrogance. What it means? We don't have good qualities, we pretend we have them. So that is even worse. But anyway, the point is, a humble person will not speak about his glories even if they are true. So we would normally expect even God to be humble, isn't it? Even if it is the reality that you are God, why brag about it? Why speak about it? So the first issue is humility. First is reality. Second is humility. But third is the issue in question in the Bhagavad Gita. That is clarity. So the whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to tell us where we should direct our love. Right? If Arjuna, if you direct your love to your kingdom, to your relatives, what will happen? You will suffer because they are temporary and at the level of the body, and you are temporary at the level of the body. So the whole purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to tell us to redirect our love towards Krishna. And then you may think, Krishna, okay, Krishna is nice, but there are so many lovable things in this world also. Then Krishna tells us, no. Whatever attracts your love in this world, its lovability comes from me. And that lovability is only a spark. Whereas I am the complete whole. Therefore, don't be attracted to that spark. Be attracted to me. So, Krishna's purpose in telling about himself is not to just brag his glories. It is to benefit us. Because only when we love the right person will we get happiness. Otherwise, our love will become the cause of our suffering. And Krishna wants to remove all misconceptions that may misdirect our love. And so he says that everything beautiful comes from me. So similarly here, Prahlad Maharaj clarifies. And actually, when a devotee is glorifying the Lord, it's like a communion. Communion means it's a very intimate union with communication. Communion is a blend of two words, communication and union. So it's a religious term that is used in the Christian tradition. That is their equivalent of something called samadhi. A deep absorption. So there is the prayers of the Bhagavatam are examples of communion. The devotee is united intimately with the Lord in the heart. But there is a communication that is going on that is made available to us to get a glimpse of what is actually happening in the heart. So what does he say? He immediately thinks, you know, if we say Krishna is only Bhakta Vatsala, that means, you know, Krishna, only if somebody flatters him, he becomes happy. Otherwise, whatever qualities you have, Krishna doesn't care only. What kind of God is this? What kind of God, if you flatter him, he becomes happy? So immediately he clarifies, what is the nature of the Lord? That is the next verse. Naivatmana prabhurayam nijalabhapurno. Manam janada vidusha karuno vrinite. Yadyat jano bhagvate vidadhitamanam. Tachatmane pratimukhasya thamukhashri. So he says, my dear Lord, actually speaking, you are Purna. Now sometimes, if we do something glorious, then somehow in material life, everything that we do just aggravates our misery. If we do something wonderful, then actually we feel apurna till somebody comes and glorifies us. Isn't it? And if we have done something wonderful, that apurnata becomes all the more. Because somebody should recognize. It goes from as simple as something, if we wear a new dress, then you know we want to say, somebody should come, hey, your dress is new, isn't it? If nobody does that, we start thinking, what happened to your eyes, can't you see? So, in material life, everybody feels apurna. But he says, my dear Lord, so people want their own glorification because they feel incomplete. My dear Lord, you don't need any glorification from anyone because you are Purna. You are Purna, Nijalabha Purna, you are self-satisfied. And he says, on top of that, actually, Manam Janat Abidusha. Abidusha means an unintelligent person. So, in the Vedic circle, actually, if we see when Shaunakrishi speaks to Suta Goswami, so at that time, Prabhupada describes that in an assembly, even if a person is to speak and represent the assembly, he may not be the speaker giving class, but he is representing those who are hearing, he also has to be qualified. And a qualified person can offer the right praise. So an ignorant person, even if he offers praise, what does he know to offer praise? It's like, you know, if somebody is a very good cook, then some other person who doesn't know anything about cooking, hey, that was very delicious. Hey, okay, we'll feel good. Okay. But if somebody else is also a good cook and he knows what it takes to cook, and then he says, hey, your cooking was really good. So if somebody knows and offers praises, then that is more, in one sense, fulfilling, because that person understands what has gone into it. So similarly, what Srinachari Thakur says, and Prabhupada also hints at it in his purport, that actually if a person is uninformed, he doesn't know anything, then his praises are also unworthy. Because the person doesn't know anything. So a cultured person will not even accept the praises of somebody who is uneducated. And the example, why? Actually the praises of the uneducated or uninformed people can mislead us. The Bhagavatam talks about it. Shvavidvara kostakarai samstutaha purusha pashu. He says that one ignorant person glorifies another ignorant person. You are so great. What is that? Camel and ass, which are, and then they start teaching each other, you know. Kwaha rupaha, kwaha vacha. So, you know. So, both of them are glorifying each other. Yeah. So, the point is that, you know, ignorant people, if they offer praise, sometimes that is just mutual flattery. And Krishna is Purna and he doesn't want that. So, he says, actually, if people offer you praises, they are avidushaha. And you don't even have to accept the praise. So in the Lalita Madhav, it is described that Lalita Madhav is a very beautiful book of Krishna's pastimes written by Rupa Goswami. And there he depicts the 10th canto pastimes in a very dramatic way. So there he says that, you know, all these kings are imprisoned by Jarasandh. And then Krishna goes and rescues them. So at that time, the kings offer praises. So at that time, the kings say that, you know, we have offered praise to you in the past. But now when we see you, we understand that actually all your praises to you were insults. Because, he says, it's like somebody is the emperor of the world and we glorify him as a landlord for a few acres of land. Somebody is the emperor, we glorify him as a landlord, that's actually an insult. Isn't it? So we realize that you are so glorious that whatever praises we have offered, they are actually insults to you. Because it's just so inadequate in describing the glory of the Lord. So he says, avidushaha. When a sadhaka comes and offers praises to you, those praises are so inadequate. What can the sadhaka understand your glory? So he says, actually, as I said, that, you know, if at all somebody wants satisfaction through glorification, then somebody who knows the subject, and then he tells, this was really good. That gives satisfaction. So if, first of all, you are Purna, you don't need any satisfaction. But if at all you need any satisfaction, you know, what satisfaction can an uninformed person's glorification give you? So when an uninformed person glorifies you, what is it? He says, Karuno Vrinite. You accept it out of Karuna for him. Why? Because when that person glorifies you, he becomes purified. Why? Because at least he's thinking of you and he's trying to use his black faculties to glorify you. So, and then he used Tachatmane Pratimukasya Thamukashri. So he gives the example of a mirror and a reflection. So he says that if you try to go decorate the reflection in the mirror, nothing happens. If you decorate the real person, then the reflection gets decorated. So he's telling that actually, my dear Lord, if somebody glorifies you, it is like decorating the original person, then that person gets benefited. there is a real person, there is a reflection. So we are all parts and parcels of Krishna, and Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So if we try to glorify ourselves, if we try to speak our own glories, there are two big problems. First is we don't have too many glories. And second is that our glories don't stay with us for too long. So what happens is, if we have to glorify ourselves, after some time it literally becomes puna punas charvita charvanana. You know, I did this, I did that, I did this, I did that. So there is one mode of hearing called autobiographical hearing. Autobiographical hearing means you tell somebody, you know, I went to this place. Yeah, I also went to that place, and then I did that, I did that, I did that. And whatever the person hears, he starts speaking his own story. And the hearer thinks, this is the 677th time I'm hearing this. So if we just start speaking our own glories, it becomes sickening after some time. It may not be sickening for us, it has become sickening for others. But when we describe Krishna's glories, Navanavarasadhamanya Uddhitam Rantumasit, Krishna reveals newer and newer rasas. So it's actually when we glorify Krishna, we become more satisfied than when we glorify ourselves. So that's why it benefits us. And now Prahlad Maharaj is telling, so what is a very beautiful flow. First he said, I am unqualified, I am low born, how can I satisfy you? Actually you are satisfied by bhakti. And he says, if there is bhakti, then even a low born is great. But now he says, actually I don't have bhakti. But you are satisfied because people who offer prayers get purified. And therefore he says, now I will offer prayer to you because it will purify me. So he is not even claiming that I have bhakti. He's simply saying that actually attempting through the activity of bhakti will purify me. So therefore I am trying to glorify you. Tasmadaham vigata viklava ishvarasya sarvatmana mahi granami yathamanisham nicho jaya guna visargam anupravishtah puyet yena hi puman anuvarnitena. So puyet, puyet means one becomes purified. Yena hi, by this, what? Anuvarnitena, by speaking about you, one becomes purified. And tasmadaham, therefore I will, vigata viklava, I give up all my doubt, I give up all my hesitation. So actually when Prahlad Maharaj first says, kim toshtu marhati, he is saying, how can I glorify you? So he is saying, I am hesitant to speak any glories of you, because I can't satisfy you. Then he says, my dear Lord, you don't need satisfaction, you are self-satisfied. When we glorify you, it is for our purification. Therefore, I give up all doubts about whether I will be able to satisfy you or not. For my purification, I will glorify you. Vigata viklava ishvarasya. I give up all my doubts and speak your glories. Speak your glories. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport about when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is talking about how he is writing this book, Chaitanya Charitamrita. In those purports, Srila Prabhupada talks extensively about how when a person is glorifying Krishna, what should be the consciousness of that person. So he says that actually one should not think that one is going to give some great talk or going to compose a great literature. One should think, my goal is simply purification. And with that goal, when one does this, then Krishna will also be glorified and we will also be purified. So Tukaram Maharaj gives a beautiful analogy. He says that, my dear Lord, your glories are so great that I can't glorify you. But, he says, and there are many great saints who have glorified you in the past. So he says that, just as a swan can walk very gracefully. A swan walks very gracefully, and there are other birds who cannot walk gracefully. But just because the other birds cannot walk gracefully, that doesn't mean that they don't have a right to walk. He says, similarly, my dear Lord, I cannot glorify you much. But that doesn't mean I don't have a right to glorify you. According to my capacity, I will glorify you. So, that was what Srila Prabhupada taught us. We shouldn't think that, sometimes we feel, you know, I am not qualified to preach. It is good to feel I am not qualified, but it is not good to not preach. Because there is so much need for Krishna's message to go out. And Srila Prabhupada would tell his disciples, your qualification is your desire. If you have the desire to preach, everything else will follow. And of course, we need to take blessings of senior Vaishnavas. But whatever we try to speak for Krishna's sake, Krishna gives us mercy, Krishna gives us empowerment. And actually when we preach, it is not for the benefit of the world. It is for first and foremost our purification. If other people get benefited, that's wonderful. So, tasmadaham vigata viklavaishvarasya. Therefore, I give up all hesitation. I give up all hesitation. And I glorify you for your sake. So, we have a writer's club. So, this verse is like one of our theme verses. You know, we don't think that we are great writers when we are writing. We are writing for our purification. Tasmadaham vigata viklavaishvarasya. I give up all my doubts and I start glorifying you. So then he goes forward. So then I won't go over all the verses because they are a little long. I'll just go over some of them. So he says, Sarveyami vidhikaras tava sattva dhamno. He says, actually, my dear Lord, all these devatas are in the mode of goodness. So again he goes to the glorification of the devatas and he says, you came for what? To protect them. This is the height of humility. Sometimes humility appears to be the antithesis of reality. You know, sometimes a devotee seems to speak in a way as if it is entirely false. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, Amara jivan sada pape ratha. You know, and here is a person, you know, who just when there was a slight trace of dishonesty in a job, he had a big family, but he resigned from the job because he said, I cannot have anything to do with immorality. Here is a person who was ready to risk his own life and the risk life of his life, own family members, because there was a fake God man whom he was trying to expose, and that God man was using his mystic powers to threaten and kill his family members, even Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So there was no trace of papa. And what is he saying? Amara jivan sada pape ratha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so Vishwanatha Thakur describes that prema is like an ocean. And in the ocean of prema, various waves keep coming up and down. And these waves, as they move up and down, they shape a devotee's perception. And when a devotee is filled with prema for Krishna, his consciousness is fixed not on Krishna, not on himself, but on Krishna. And even when the devotee is very pure, when he compares his purity with Krishna's purity, he thinks, actually, I am so insignificant. And therefore he feels, Amara jivan sada pape ratha. Therefore he feels, actually, I am so sinful. We may be pure, but as compared to Krishna, what is our purity? So therefore, a devotee is not speaking lies or in just artificially being humble for the sake of being humble. Actually, when the devotee is Krishna conscious and is conscious of how exalted Krishna is, then naturally one feels, what is my status? So he is telling over here, my dear Lord, actually you came for what? You came to protect the demigods. Kshemaya bhutaya uttam sukhaya chasya. Kshemaya bhutaya. He says, kshema means yoga kshemam vahamyaham we have. Kshemaya, for the protection. And then uttam sukhaya. You came to do, give the ultimate happiness to everyone. And very beautiful, Narsimhadev is so fierce. But what he is saying? Vikriditam bhagvato ruchiravatarai. Ruchir means very relishable, very beautiful. So vikriditam, you are doing krida, my dear Lord. You think, what is this? You know, putting a garland around yourself, that is not a krida, that is very ferocious. But he is seeing it all from the perspective of love. Vikriditam bhagvato ruchiravatarai. Ruchiravatarai. Actually, such a relishable avatar this is, my dear Lord. So Vishwanatha Thakur describes that actually if you look at in Prahlad Maharaj's earlier description there, 7.5, 7.6. There it is Govinda Bhitani me Krishna Graha Grihitatma. So the primary, there are several references to Krishna. So he says that actually Prahlad Maharaj was attracted to Krishna. But when Narasimhadev came and delivered him, all his love got concentrated to Narasimhadev. So he says, this is how sometimes some of us have this very ultra premature doubt. You know, if I am worshipping Krishna and my swarup is with Lord Ram in Ayodhya, what will happen to me? You know, that is so premature. It's like you know that story that there's a mother and a father once had a debate. You know, should my son become our son become an engineer or a doctor? So then the debate became so fierce that they finally went to the court. And then the judge said, you know, why do you have to come here? Just ask the child what he wants to do. The parents said, we can't do that. Why? He's not yet born.
So, this is like that. You are worrying whether my Swarupa is in Ayodhya or Goloka or Vaikuntha or whatever.
So we are just struggling to chant 16 rounds right now.
But anyway, here Acharya has given answer that even if we are worshipping Krishna right now, and if it happens that our eternal Swarupa is with Lord Ram, once our material conditioning falls off and our natural spiritual attraction gets evoked, then we will automatically gravitate towards Lord Ram. So, you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami. He says that actually the Shantaras is the lowest of all the rasas. And Shantaras has two characteristics. Shantaras is like the foundation. You know, the bhakti is like a building. Building has to have a foundation. So, from Shantaras, everything moves forward up. So, Shantaras has two characteristics. And what is that? First characteristic is complete detachment from matter. And second characteristic is complete attachment to Krishna. So, right now, even our foundation is not ready and we are thinking about the superstructure. It is not required. But anyway, the answer is here that even if we are attracted to a particular form of the Lord, when our Swarupa, when it comes that our Pararupa starts dissolving, our material identification starts going away, then naturally our original identity, according to that, we will get attracted to a particular form of the Lord. So he is saying, we create the, my dear Lord, Ruchira Avatar, such a beautiful avatar you are. And then, now the first goal of Prahlad Maharaj, first apprehension he had was, you know, can I offer prayers? But now he remembers, he's thinking, Brahmaji has told me, there's a particular mission that I am on. What is that mission? I have to pacify the anger of the Lord. So Lord has already become pacified, but he feels that I have to fulfill what Brahmaji has told me. So therefore he says, my dear Lord, you came to deliver all the Devgas. Now, this demon, the Hiranyakashipu is killed, so please become peaceful. So that is the next prayer. So he says that actually all the demigods are happy because this demon is killed, and there's the famous word, Modet Sadhur Api Vrishchika Sarpa Hatya. That even Sadhu is pleased when serpent is killed. And then this is a very beautiful line, you can just repeat this, last line of that. Rupam Narsimha Vibhayaya Janasmaranti. So he says, Rupam Narsimham, this form of Lord Narsimhadev, Janaha, people, Smaranti, they will remember. For what purpose? Vibhayaya, for becoming free from fear. So he says, my dear Lord, the incarnation in which you appeared was so fierce, so ferocious, that in future, just by thinking of this form, all the demons will become terror-struck. And they will not dare to do demoniac activities. So therefore, my dear Lord, you have removed the threat of the demons completely now. And the demigods are happy, the demons are dead. Please give up your anger. Please become peaceful. So that is his request. So we can also remember, Rupam Narsimham, that this form we can remember. For what? Vibhayaya Jana Smaranti. We can remember this Lord, form of the Lord, to become free from fear. And then I just this verse earlier, Naham Bibhemya. I am not afraid of you, my dear Lord. Although this form is so frightful. Then he describes what is it that I am afraid of. So he describes it very graphically. Trastosmi aham krupana vatsa ladusogra. Samsara chakra kadanat grasatam pranitaha. Baddha svakarma bhirya uchitam te angri moolam. Preeto apavarga sharanam vayase kadanu. So, trasto, I am trasta, I am very troubled. And very beautifully, Krishna is known to be bhakta vatsala. But remember, what is the thought flow going on? Prahlad Maharaj is not claiming to be bhakta. So he is saying, I am a krupana. But you are so kind, you are krupana vatsala. So you are not just bhakta vatsala, you are a krupana vatsala. Even for the fallen, you are loving them. So, trastosmi aham krupana vatsala dusogra. It's very intolerable for me, my dear Lord. What is intolerable? samsara chakra kadanad grasatam pranitah. The samsara chakra is intolerable for me anymore. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the 10th canto, in the 3rd chapter purport, there he says that Devaki actually represents bhakti and Kamsa represents fear of material existence. So when a devotee is fearful of material existence, and just as Kamsa killed whom? The Ashtagarbha. And those Ashtagarbha represent lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. So he says like that. So three things are there. Three components are there in the analogy. Devaki is bhakti, Kamsa is fear of material existence, and the garbhas, the children, are lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. So he says that actually when we try to develop bhakti, the first thing that comes out of our consciousness is all these things, lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. And if we by philosophical knowledge have cultivated fear of material existence, most of us have desire for material existence. At least we don't have desire for material existence. We have desire for material enjoyment. But if you cultivate fear for material existence, then what happens? Just as Kamsa killed the Ashtagarbha, then the fear of material existence kills. It kills lust, anger, greed, and pride and illusion in our hearts. So when that happens, then the Guru manifests in the heart, Balramji, and then Krishna manifests. So Prahlad Maharaj is manifesting that over there. Trastos me, my dear Lord, I am fearful of material existence. Samsara chakra kadanad grasatam pranitah. I am fallen in this, bound in this. And what does he say over there? Baddha. Then Lord may say, actually, ultimately everything that happens to you is under the sanction of the Lord. So have I thrown you here? Baddha swakarma bir. He says, I am bound by my own karma. He's not. Later on in the second chapter, in the 10th chapter, he will talk about how Bhakta Lakshana Jigyasur, that for, to demonstrate the characteristics of your pure devotee, you have sent me to this world. But here, in the waves of the ocean of Prema, the wave of humility is manifesting in the heart of Prahlad. And therefore, he is not thinking of how I have descended from the spiritual world. That is of course a reality, but it is a distant reality. He is thinking of the immediate reality. Immediate reality is that I am born and living among demoniac people. So therefore, he is thinking that by own karma I have fallen over here. And Yushitam Deyangri Moolam. My dear Lord, what do I want to do? To your lotus feet I want to come back. Angri Moolam Preeto Apavarga Sharanam Vayase Kadanu. When, O Lord, will you call me back to your lotus feet? So here, Prahlad Maharaj, this is the indirect way. He's not asking anything from the Lord. He's saying, my dear Lord, I long for you. When will you call me back to your lotus feet? Those lotus feet is a shelter of liberation. I want to come back to them. And then, this is the only place where Prahlad Maharaj directly expresses a desire. Other places, he is actually expressing glorification only. A few other places, he requests, my Lord, please engage me in bhakti. But the Lalsamai Icha, which talks about, Rector of Devotion talks about, he describes over there. And then the Lord Narasimhadev says, Prahlad, what is this? Now you are the prince, and now all the other demons are killed, so you have to become the king. And in this material world, you can become the king and you can enjoy. So Lord is testing Prahlad Maharaj. So Prahlad Maharaj replies. He says, no, my dear Lord, this doesn't work. This is a very nice verse. You can repeat this. It's a very important verse. So there are 5 verses in Prahlad Maharaj's prayers which sort of dissect material existence. You know, material existence comes in various masks. And the masks look very attractive. The masks, if somebody is a very ferocious person, but he wears a very attractive mask, whatever he is, he must be a nice person, we think. So like that, material existence comes masked before us. So the Acharya's insights and the Vaishnava's prayers are like the swords which unmask material existence. So they are analyzing and unmasking material existence. So there are 5 prayers in Prahlad Maharaj's section which totally unmask material existence. So this is the first prayer. Yasmat priya priya viyoga sanyoga janma. Shokagnina sakalayoni shudayamanaha. Dukkhaushadham tadapi dukkham atadhyaham. Bhuman brahmami vadame tavadasya yogam. So he says, my dear Lord, in this world things are always changing. And yasmat priya apriya viyoga sanyoga. So there are things, something which are dear to us, priya, something which is apriya. And there are two possibilities. We get what we don't want or we don't get what we want. So there is priya and apriya and there is viyoga and sanyoga. So if there is, viyoga means separation, sanyoga means contact. So if what we want, we get it. That means there is priya and sanyoga. We want something and that happens and we feel happy. And if there is something which we don't want and we can avoid it, that also we feel happy. But he says, my dear Lord, what happens in this world? Most of the time we get what we don't want and we don't get what we want. So therefore, shokagnina sakala yonishu dahiyamana. So everybody is lamenting in this world. Why? Because even if people get a lot of things, still the mind will always want more. Mind will always want more. Therefore, shokagnishu dahiyamana. Everybody is burning in the fire of lamentation. Dukkha ushadham tadapi dukkhamadadhyaham. And if somebody is able to solve a problem, the solution becomes a bigger problem. And how may we see that? So actually, you know, these sort of prayers make our intelligence fit. Prabhupada writes that, you know, by analyzing the philosophy from different directions, we can strengthen our intelligence. So we have to make our intelligence fit. So what is fit? Fit is an acronym, F-I-T. It is futility, insubstantiality and temporality. So these are the three possibilities when we try to enjoy our senses. When we get into material enjoyment, there are three things that can happen. And there are only these three things that can happen. Nothing else can happen. So what is it? Just let's take a straightforward example. Then we can go into bigger example. Suppose we hear, you know, there is a big feast today. And in the feast, say there is a favorite item that we like. Say we like Malpoa. Then there is Malpoa. So what happens is, our anticipation rises. And actually, people in material life, they call it anticipation, but it's not anticipation, it's torment. Why? Because we're just craving, when I'll get it. So, as soon as the thought of a particular desirable sense object comes in the mind, till the time we get it, we are restless. And Krishna says, this is actually the fire. Dushpuren analinacha, it burns like fire. So now interestingly, if you look at it in terms of lust, even materialistic people know that it burns. You know, in movies they have songs like Savan Jo Aag Lagaye. So they also know it is a fire. But they think that enjoyment will extinguish the fire. But actually the enjoyment is the fuel for the fire. It will not extinguish, it will make it further. But the point is, even materialistic people know it's a fire. It's a torment in the heart. So what happens? So imagine we have a desire that I want to get something delicious to eat. Something which I like. So right from the moment I start, I think when. And then actually the feast is served and that item is not there only. Then what happens? Everything becomes futile. So say a boy thinks, I want to love this girl. And then he goes and proposes to her. Tack, he gets a slap. You know, all the bubble, all the balloon that is there, tack, one blow and it's burst completely. So, the first possibility is we fantasize about something, but we don't get it only. What is the second possibility? We fantasize about it and we get it. So we think that there will be a nice malpoa for me to eat. And then the malpoa comes along. And then we are waiting, we eat it. And we find the sugar in it is less. And then what happens? Insubstantiality. It doesn't live up to our expectations. It doesn't live up to our expectations. So suppose a boy proposes to a girl and then somehow the girl agrees. But what happens is, you know, our mind is on a imagination overdrive all the time. And especially when some sense object catches the fancy, then the mind becomes hyperactive. And it's not the problem of any particular person. What our mind imagines, no person in the material world can ever be like that. So that's why what happens is, when a relationship starts, it's like, first if the relationship doesn't materialize only, like the balloon is there, in one moment it bursts. When the second, slowly the air starts going out of the balloon. It's like that. That means what happens is, we have imagined something very wonderful, and it's not necessarily the problem of any particular person. It's just that, in our heart is ultimately longing for the love of Krishna. And when we try to make another person as a substitute for Krishna, it is not the problem of that person. No person can be substituted for Krishna. So it is our own mistake that we are thinking, we are imagining that somebody will be substitute for Krishna. So what happens is, we turn and we find out that the enjoyment is insubstantial. It doesn't live up to our expectations. We thought it would be so wonderful, but actually it turns out to be an anticlimax. It's an anticlimax. Just when the climax comes, you know, suppose somebody just climbs up on Mount Everest and is about to hoist his flag over there. And he finds there's no ground, there's a valley, and he's just going down over there. So it's like that in material life. We climb up the summit and we find at the summit there is a valley, there is no summit only. So it's like that. We find that we get the enjoyment, but it doesn't live up to our expectations. That is insubstantial. That's the second possibility. Somebody may say, no, this happens, but I will get the enjoyment. So I get the Malpo and it's delicious also. It's delicious also. But then the third thing comes, that is temporality. It's temporary. How much can I eat? I get one, I get two, then I ask, can I have one more? Servings are limited. And then maybe we wait for some feast when everything is unlimited. Even if everything is unlimited, what happens is our stomach is limited. So ultimately it's temporary. We can't eat as much as we want. Actually, even when people have unlimited facility for sense gratification, when people give up sense gratification, it is not because they are satisfied, it is because their bodily capacity is exhausted. When people give up sense gratification, it is not because sense gratification satisfied them. It is because the bodily capacity to enjoy has become exhausted. So sense gratification actually never satisfies us. Srila Prabhupada used a very insightful example. You know, Prahlad Maharaj will later on compare the sense gratification to scratching an itch. So Prabhupada says, when we scratch an itch, we may get some relief. But we stop scratching not because the boil has gone away, but because the boil has become so bad that we can't scratch anymore. So actually, the scratching provides the opposite of relief. So what happens is, the person, if the scratching were meant to give relief, then we would just get complete relief through scratching. But we can't get complete relief and we stop scratching because that relief turns to make the problem worse. So even when people get material enjoyment, sometimes especially in India, where at least there is some social convention, social norms that are there. So there's some restriction on sense gratification. So some people feel, if I go to the West, no restriction, I can just enjoy. But nobody can just enjoy because the body's capacity is limited. And when people stop enjoying, it's not because they're satisfied, it's because their bodily capacity is exhausted. And that's why the sense gratification, what other possibility is there? I imagine an enjoyment, I don't get it only. I imagine an enjoyment, I get it, but it is not what my imagination seems to be, makes it out to be. Then I imagine the enjoyment, it is good, but then my capacity gets exhausted. So in the material world, even if somebody is able to form a satisfactory relationship, how long is the relationship going to last? It's going to end. And the more a person, you know, the nature of material things is, the more we get shelter in a material thing, the more we become shelterless when that material thing goes away. So the more we get relief and protection and satisfaction in the relationship, apart from Krishna, the more will be our devastation when that relationship is disrupted. And it will be surely disrupted. So, of course, if we spiritualize that relationship and connect with Krishna, that's different. But the point is, these are the only three possibilities that are there. So in all three possibilities, the ultimate result is frustration. Futility, insubstantiality, and temporality. So, I don't get it, it's futile. I get it, it doesn't live up to my expectation, that's insubstantial. I get it, it lives up to my expectations, but my capacity is temporary. Everything in the material world is temporary. I get frustrated again. So therefore, shokagnishuddhayyamanaha. Everybody is burning in the fire of material existence. Dayyamana. Everybody is burning in the fire of material existence. And he says, dukkha, the same point. You know, when the enjoyment comes, and then the enjoyment goes, the frustration is far greater. That's why he's saying, dukkhaushadham tat api dukkham atadhyaham. That actually, if there's aushadhi for the dukkh, then that becomes an even greater problem. And then, the Lord may say, okay, if you don't want any material benediction, then you can ask for liberation.
So Prahlada says, nothing doing, I don't want liberation.
That's the next verse. So what he says is, my dear Lord, I will perform your bhakti and I will attain back to your lotus feet. So, Durgani te pad yugalaya hamsa sangha. He says that, my dear Lord, I will cross over this whole material existence and come back to you, to be forever at your lotus feet. And then he goes for, then there is the famous verses are there, how? Nobody in this world is a protector. That the father is not, the parents are not the protector of the child, the medicine, the doctors are not protectors of the patients. The ship is not the protector of the person who is drowning. Why? Because all these protectors sometimes work, sometimes don't work. And that, why they work, it's only if in our karmic destiny it is to work, they will work. Otherwise, they will not work. Therefore, tavad vibhot anubhritanam tadbhikshitanam. As long as, my dear Lord, you are neglecting such a person, you cannot be protected. So now, Prahlad Maharaj goes into a philosophical section, which we'll skip. What he is doing is, he's saying that, my dear Lord, so actually this whole material existence is under your control and you are non-different from material existence. But although you are non-different from material existence, in this material existence there is forgetfulness of you. Therefore, I don't want to be in this material existence. And then he moves forward. And then he comes back. He says that in this material existence, I saw that my father had achieved more than anyone else can ever achieve. What was his power that even the demigods used to be frightened? Brujrumbitena. When he would just raise his eyebrows, they would get frightened. But what did I see you? I saw that in one moment you destroyed everything. And therefore I know there is only one thing that is valuable in this world. And that is what I ask you from, my dear Lord. What is that one thing? He describes this in this verse. It's a long verse, but he says, Kalatmanopayamam nijabhritya parishvam. I want the service of your devotees. Nijabhritya parishvam. So he is thinking that, look at the contrast. Prahlad was just a helpless 5-year-old boy who had nothing. And Hiranyakashipu was the monarch of the universe who had everything. But in one moment, everything that Hiranyakashipu had got was lost. And he is thinking, I was redeemed. So what did I have? Still, Prahlad Maharaj is not thinking, I am a devotee. What did I have? He said, I had the blessings of Narad Muni. Therefore, I have understood the only thing of value in material existence is the association of devotees, the service of devotees, the blessings of devotees. Therefore, what do I want? Nijabhritya parshvam. I want to be associated with your devotees. That is the only thing of value in material existence, my dear Lord. Everything else is valueless. I know the nature of all ashish. Tasmad aham tanubhritam ashishogya. I know all the nature of all ashish. I don't want any of these things. I want only the service of your lotus feet. And then is the second verse which analyzes material existence. It's a very powerful analysis. Kutra ashisha shruti shrukha mrgatrishni rupa. Kvedam kalevaram ashesha rujam viroha. Nirvidyate natu jano yadapiti vidvan. Kama nalam madulavai shamayandurapai. So, again the Lord says, see, so you can have my devotees associated and you can have opulence also. He says, my dear Lord, what is the use of any material benefit? Kutra ashish. What benediction can I ask you for? Why? He gives two characteristics of material enjoyment. Shruti Shukha and Mrugatrushni. Shruti Shukha means we hear about it and we see it. But when we experience it, it is not there. So mirage, we see it. But when you go there, actually there is no water over there. So it's like a Mrugatrushni and it's like a Shruti Shukha. Why Shruti Shukha? Especially if we live in the association of materialistic people, then everybody is talking about material enjoyment. So we keep hearing about it constantly. So this Shruti is different from the Shravanam that we do in the association of devotees. This is what we do in material association. So he says, in material association, we hear about material enjoyment, we see material enjoyment. But when you experience it, it's not there. Somebody will say, why not? You have such a healthy body. You can enjoy. He says, what is this body? Kvedam kalevaram ashesha rujam viroha. He says, this kalevara is what? Ashesha ruja. Ruja is disease. Ashesh is unlimited. Viroha is the breeding place. You know, this is a breeding place of unlimited diseases. What can one enjoy with this body? This body can be overcome by disease at any moment. Or sometimes people think, yeah, this philosophy is very pessimistic. What is this? Why are you so negative? Why do you look at only the miseries of material existence? There is misery, there is happiness also. Kabhi khushi, kabhi gham. People say like that. But actually, is it like that? Let's analyze objectively. How can we analyze objectively? All our material enjoyment is based on our body. So now let us look at our body's capacity to enjoy and capacity to suffer. So if we understand this, we will dive deep into Krishna consciousness. You know, why? Because if we just objectively analyze, so this is DIVE, I have an article on my website on this. So DIVE is an acronym which compares the body's capacity to enjoy and body's capacity to give suffering. So D is duration. Let's think objectively. Now there is no need to be philosophical in terms of having faith in Shastra. Just be logical and objective. Duration. For how much duration can the body give enjoyment? If we eat, maybe for a few minutes. Other forms of sense gratification, few minutes. So the body can give enjoyment for a few minutes as far as duration is concerned. But how much for duration can the body give suffering? Sometimes for years. If some people get back pain, that can just go on for years and years. Sometimes people get a cancer, and for months and months, the only way they can stop from screaming is by taking painkillers or taking anesthetics. So if we look at it objectively, is there any pleasure that can make one, you know, cry out the ecstasy for months and months at the body level? There is nothing like that. So objectively, if we see, the duration for which the body gives pleasure is very tiny. And the duration for which the body gives you pain, that can be huge. Of course, we hope that nobody gets that kind of pain. But the potentiality we are seeing, so we can say that potentially we may not get even any happiness also. But potentiality, if we see, the body's capacity to give pain is much more. And even if somebody doesn't get any disease, actually the period of enjoyment is only the youth primarily. As we start getting older, the enjoyment becomes lesser and lesser, and the problems become more and more. And youth is only a small part of one's life. There is middle age, there is old age, and the enjoyment is practically not there. Even then there are no diseases. So from the duration point of view, the time for which the body gives enjoyment is very little. Time for which the body gives suffering is far greater. Then I is intensity. So ashesha rujam viroha, that's the word we are elaborating on it. Unlimited disease it is breeding for. We look at intensity. That if somebody is, so Radhanath Maharaj used this example, and he says if somebody is sitting on a very lying down on a very soft bed, you know, being massaged by very soft hands, person may feel such an exhilarating sense of comfort and enjoyment. But at that time, somebody comes and pricks a pin. So, you know, the whole body is experiencing softness and comfort. But one micromillimeter of the body experiences pain. And what happens? That intensity of pain supersedes the intensity of the pleasure everywhere else. So sometimes we may be eating a delicious sweet on the full... this realization I have. We may be eating a delicious sweet. The sweet is pervading the full tongue. But at that time, the tongue gets caught in between the teeth. So one tiny part of the tongue is caught between the teeth, but the intensity of that pain makes the sweet non-existent over there. Isn't it? So if we look at the intensity, the body is actually sensitized much more for pain than for pleasure. If we look at the intensity, the body's capacity for experiencing pleasure is much, much lesser. And it's the intensity with which we can experience pain is far greater. Then, the third is, V is variety. Variety. Now, if we think, what are the variety of the ways in which the body can give us pleasure, and what are the variety of the ways in which the body can give us pain? Now, if I think of this little finger, now how can this little finger really give me pleasure? You know, I rub it against some senses, maybe something in my nose, I pull it out. Practically, there's very little. But you can think of how many ways in which this little finger can give pain. From the least harmless, sometimes while cutting the nail, I cut too much. And a little part gets exposed and something gets rubbed against something. Or it can get cut. The finger can get cut. Finger can get burned. Finger can get caught in the door sometimes. The finger can just stretched out and something thuck, falls on it. So if we see, there are so many ways in which every part of the body can give us pain. And the number of ways in which the part of the body can give us pleasure is very little. If you see our teeth, the only way they can practically give us pleasure is by chewing and eating. They are required in speaking, but we can't say the teeth are giving me pleasure. The whole voice box is involved there. But even the teeth can give so many pains that there is a whole branch of medicine called dentistry required to deal with the pain. Isn't it? So think about any part of the body. There are so many variety of ways in which it can give us pain. The eyes. The only way they can give us pleasure when we see something beautiful. But what are the ways? Some particle may go inside the eye. Some disease may come up. Some cataract may happen. Sometimes secretion fluid comes out and then it contaminates the eyes. So many ways. And I want to speak of somebody hits the eye. It's terrible. So there are so many ways. The variety of ways in which the body can give us pleasure is far less than the variety of ways in which the body can give pain. And actually, that another way of understanding this is, if we look at the variety, in general, the variety of ways we can have sense pleasure, it's limited. But if you look at the number of diseases that are there, they are practically ashesh rujam viroh. They are unlimited. The estimates of doctors vary, but what doctors say is that approximately there are around 40,000 diseases that are known today. And out of them only 4,000 are curable. All the other diseases, the doctor will tell you, I get this disease, suffer now. You got this, suffer now. Of course, some people, what is a disease and what comprises a cure of a disease, these are also debated issues. Of course, what is not debated is the patient is having pain. So the point is, objectively speaking, the body is much more suited for suffering. A variety of ways. And the last E is extent. Extent means, if we look at the body, what all parts of the body can give us pleasure? It's primarily the five senses. Is there any way my kidney can give me pleasure? Well, no. But is there any way it can give me pain? Lot of ways. Kidney stone is just one common disease. There are so many other diseases. And what to speak of my lungs and my medulla oblongata and my rectum and my small intestine and my large intestine. So, you know, there are every single part of the body can give us pain. Whereas the part of the body that can give us pleasure are so limited. So it's a simple objective analysis. Duration, intensity, variety and extent. That the body gives much more misery than pleasure. So actually it is not just equivalent pleasure and pain. Material life gives us insignificant happiness and significant suffering. It is insignificant happiness and significant suffering. And therefore, if one understands this, one will turn away. Prabhupada Mara says, but it's very difficult to turn away. Nirvidyate natu janoyada piti vidwan. Even a wise person knows it, he's vidwan. Still he can't give it up. Why? Kama nalam madhulavai shamayandurapai. He says, madhulavai, there is a drop of nectar that is intoxicating. And that little pleasure hooks the person completely. And durapai, although it's very difficult to get, it's very difficult to give up also. So therefore, a person stays caught in material existence. And now, he comes this very devotional section. So he's given this analysis. And he has thought that, my dear Lord, I want the association of your devotees. In the material life, whatever one gets, it's filled with misery. But so basically, you know what he is doing? He's sort of giving us a picture of the two life charts. The life chart of material prosperity, material advancement, and the life chart of devotional advancement. So he says, what was the life chart of material progress was? Followed by his father, Hiranyakashipu. And he says, what happened? In one moment, everything was lost. And now he thinks, what happened to me? And he describes, my dear Lord, what kind of mercy have you given me? It's one of the most beautiful verses in this praise. Kaham Rajap Prabhava Isha Tamodikesmin. జాత సురేతర కులేక్వ తవానుకంప న బ్రహ్మణో నతు భవస్య న వైరమాయా యన్మే అర్పిత శిరసి పద్మకర ప్రసాద. సో హీస్ థింకింగ్, మై డియర్ లార్డ్, వాట్ డిడ్ ఐ గెట్ జస్ట్ నౌ? యూ ప్లేస్డ్ యువర్ హ్యాండ్ ఆన్ మై హెడ్ శిరసి పద్మకర ప్రసాద, యూ పుట్ యువర్ హ్యాండ్ ఆన్ మై హెడ్ అండ్ వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్? హీ సేస్ దిస్ ఇస్ సచ్ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ మర్సీ. క్వాహం రజ ప్రభవైషతమోధికే స్మి, ఐ వాస్ బోర్న్ ఇన్ ద లోవర్ మోడ్స్ and actually I was not born as asura also, suretara kule, I am born as asura kula. Kvatavanukampa, what mercy have you given me by the Lord? What is that mercy? He says na brahmano natu bhavasya na vai ramaya, that actually you did not give this to Brahmaji, you did not give it to Lord Shiva, you did not give it to even your own consort Lakshmi Devi. That mercy you have given me. And he says, my dear Lord, I can't understand, what is the qualification that you see in me? And then this, from here on he starts, what is the qualification you see in my life, my dear Lord? It is my connection with Narad Muni. It is because of this that you have given me such extraordinary mercy. And therefore all that I ask you for is the association of your devotees. So if we look at it, in a material life there is a lot of endeavor and little pleasure. And if we honestly compare the amount of endeavor that we do in material life and the amount of endeavor that we do in spiritual life, we'll often find that we endeavor much more in material life than we endeavor in spiritual life. But even with our little endeavor in spiritual life, we get some returns. We get some spiritual happiness. So as devotee thinks, you know, if my material life I'm putting so much effort, why should Krishna deserve anything less than what my material boss is getting? What my material life is getting? Why should Krishna deserve anything less? So if we put in the kind of effort that we are putting in material life, in Krishna consciousness, the returns will be phenomenal. Because Krishna, he does it, when, although he says, ye thamam prapadyante, now, as all people surrender unto me, I record, reciprocate. But actually, Krishna's reciprocation is not in quantitative terms. Now, we may do this much and he will give so much more. He is not equivalent in quantity. He is far, far greater in quantity. And he's thinking, my dear Lord, you just bestowed your mercy on me. So Krishna is always in our heart. He is ever willing, ever waiting, ever working. He is ever willing. When will the soul turn towards me? Whenever. And imagine if we go and befriend some person. If we are very wealthy and there is some pauper somewhere. And then we tell that pauper, come on, you know, I'll make you my friend. And that pauper says, I don't need your friendship. You will feel insulted. I am offering you my friendship. You are a pauper. I am a millionaire. You are rejecting my friendship. So actually that's like that with Krishna multiplied many, many more times. Now Krishna is telling, come. You know, I want to love you. Let us develop a relationship. And Krishna says no. But Krishna never gets insulted. Krishna is ever willing, ever waiting, and ever working. He doesn't go away from our heart. No matter what happens, no matter what we do, you know, that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, apichet sudracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak, our acharyas give elaborate analysis of that. But one of the points that our acharyas make, you know, right from Sridhar Swami downwards to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they say there is nothing that we can do that can stop Krishna from loving us. There is nothing that we can ever do that can stop Krishna from loving us. That is how utterly unconditional Krishna's love is for us. If we can't experience Krishna's love, it is because we have covered our eyes. We have misdirected our consciousness. But Krishna's love for us is such that we can never stop Krishna from loving us. And Prahlad Maharaj is thinking, my dear Lord, what was my qualification? So in the next few verses, he glorifies the spiritual master. And then he talks about, he first says, my dear Lord, actually you are not partial. Were you partial? You are not partial. There is Sevanurupam Udayona Paravaratvam. There is no partiality in you. Everything is Sevanurupa. As per service. If somebody renders service, you reciprocate. Srila Prabhupada was asked, do you love all your disciples equally? Prabhupada said, yes. But if somebody comes forward to render service, I reciprocate. So Krishna, naturally if somebody takes more responsibility, Prabhupada will reciprocate more. So this whole chapter, this whole section starts with, in the 6th canto, 25th chapter, actually, Indra is favored by the Lord apparently. And Parikshit Maharaj asks, you know, Krishna should be impartial. Why is he partial like this? And then he describes this whole narrative. So the whole question is, Krishna partial or is he impartial? Is Krishna says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, I am impartial. So Krishna, is he partial or is he impartial? He is impartially partial. Now what does it mean? How can somebody be impartially partial? That means Krishna is definitely partial to his devotees. There is no doubt about it. Krishna will go out of his way to help his devotees. So then he is partial. Then how is he impartial? He impartially allows everyone to become his devotee. So that is how he is impartially partial. He is partial to his devotees, but he is completely impartial about letting everyone become his devotee. That's why he is impartially partial. So that impartial partiality is illustrated by how actually Krishna is more pleased, Narasimha Dev is more pleased with a person born in a demoniac family, Prahlad, than he is pleased with who? With devatas over here. Sevanu rupa mudayona paravaratvam. Actually, it is entirely according to service. If anybody is making spiritual advancement, Krishna is not having any favorites. That person is rendering service, that's why that person is making spiritual advancement. Na paravaratvam. Actually, this is very important for us to, as devotees. Krishna doesn't have any favorites in the sense that Krishna doesn't necessarily favor one person over another. Krishna is ready to give his mercy to everyone. So, as a devotee, now this analogy Vishwanatha Thakur gives and Sridhar Swami also gives in the Samoham Sarvabhuteshu purport. But there Chakravarti Pad says, this analogy, here the analogy is of Surataror. Surataror is of a Kalpataru. He says, Kalpataru, whatever you ask, you will get from that. Whatever we ask, we will get from that. So actually Krishna is like a Kalpataru and the Krishna consciousness movement is also like a Kalpataru. What does that mean? What we come for, we will get. Sometimes some young devotees, they read some news somewhere on the internet and they think, oh, there is this controversy going on, there is this controversy going on. What is happening in Krishna conscious movement? It's actually what you want, you will get. If you want controversy, you will get more controversy than anywhere else in the world within Krishna conscious movement. If you want power, you will get power. If you want money, you will get money. If you want to commit offenses, you can commit more offenses than anywhere else. If you want wealth, you will get wealth. If you want Krishna, you will get Krishna also. So Surataror, what we want, Krishna will give us. What we want, Krishna conscious movement will also give us. It's like that. Actually, anything in the material world will always be embroiled with controversy. It's inevitable because the nature of material world. But the point is, beyond the controversy, something much more is available in Krishna consciousness. That is Krishna himself. So there in the purport, we'll just complete in a few minutes. We won't be able to go over all the verses. But in that purport of Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, he says, Vishwanatha says that this Surataror, this analogy of Krishna being like a desire tree is not proper. Although Prahlad Maharaj used the analogy over there, and Sridhar Swami used that analogy in that purport of 9.29. He says the Surataro analogy is good enough to describe Krishna's relationship with materialistic people. At whatever you ask from them, they give you. Krishna says the desire tree will give. But he says, a desire tree doesn't become attached to somebody who comes to that desire tree. A desire tree doesn't become the enemy of somebody whom it is attached to. But Krishna, you become attached to your devotees. Krishna, you become the enemy of your devotees' enemies. So therefore, Krishna, you are not a Kalpataru. This Kalpataru analogy is useless to describe you. So Kalpataru analogy describes only your relationship with materialistic people. For describing your relationship with your devotee, what is the analogy? He says, actually, your relationship with your devotees is so intense that there is no analogy to describe that relationship. You are the be all and end all of your devotees. There is nothing to describe that relationship at all. So, like this, Prahlad Maharaj goes on and offers this point of how much Krishna loves his devotees. This Chakravarti Pad elaborates in the conclusion of Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto. So there Krishna describes, when concluding the message, he says that who is the most intelligent person? He says, Esha buddhimatam buddhir manisha cha manishinam yet satyam anriteneha martena apnoti chamrutam. He says, who is the most intelligent person? He says, this material existence is insignificant. It can just, you know, we have so many plans and dreams for our life, but one bug or one bang can finish our whole life. It's one bug or one bang. So it's therefore anrutam. He says it's as bad as non-existent only. But he says that Krishna, if this perishable, flimsy material existence and one life in that, if somebody offers to you, or rather Krishna is saying, if somebody offers this to me and he gets eternal life in return, that person is the most intelligent person. So then Krishna Chakra Thakur takes the role of Uddhava over there. He goes into the mind of Uddhava and he says, but Krishna, isn't this cheating? Now somebody is offering so little to you. You know, if you offer 1 rupee and that person gives 1 crore rupees in return. Well, this is not a bargain. This is cheating. This is daylight robbery, you may say. So Krishna, how is it that the devotee offers so little to you, yet satyam anriteneha martena apnoti namrutam? Isn't the devotee cheating you? So Krishna replies, Vishnu Thakur tells, Krishna says, I love to be cheated by my devotees. I love to be cheated by my devotees. And then Krishna gets angry. And he says, do you think I have a business relationship with my devotee? That I am seeing how much the devotee gives me and then I will measure and decide how much my devotee I'll give to my devotee? He says, my relationship with my devotee is based on love. And actually, when the devotee offers something to me, that I don't need that. That devotee is offering something to me actually opens the heart of that devotee for me to offer something to him. Till the devotee doesn't offer something to me, his heart is closed. And therefore, what I want to offer, I cannot give to him. So therefore, he says that I am longing to offer all my blessings to my devotee. And the devotee just has to open his heart to receive it. So when we are rendering some service, actually we are not offering something to Krishna. We are just opening our heart so that Krishna can flood our heart with it. So therefore, he says that this is the nature of the relationship with Krishna and devotee. So Markandeya Rishi, he talks about the same thing further. He's, you know, Ramanacharya in this commentary to 7.18 in the Bhagavad Gita, Udara Sarva Evaite Gyanitva Atma Iva Mematam. So he's talking about 4 kinds of people who surrender to him. And he says all of them are Udara. They're all very Udara. Now Prabhupada says broad minded. Now the word Udara means generous. Now, Ramanacharya in his Gita Bhashya analyzes very beautifully. Why does he use the word Udara over here? Udara means charitable. So actually Krishna is the supreme charity giver. How can Krishna call his devotee as charitable? So actually Ramanacharya gives such a beautiful explanation. He says, Krishna controls everything in the material world except one thing. And that is our heart. He controls everything in the world except our heart. But Krishna longs and hungers and thirsts for our heart's love. And therefore, because Krishna is longing for our heart's love, if somebody offers that heart's love even in a contaminated way, even with a material desire, somebody goes to Krishna, Krishna is hungering for that love and Krishna feels grateful to that person. You are offering your love to me, how charitable you are. So this is Krishna. Actually, everything that he has given us is his. But when we offer our love to him, Krishna thinks, oh, you are so charitable. So Markandeya Rishi says, Krishna, what is your relationship with your devotees? He says, first, you give your mercy to your devotees. That's how the devotee starts practicing devotional service. Then when the devotee starts practicing devotional service, you give that devotee ecstasy. And when the devotee gets ecstasy, and he starts crying tears in ecstasy, you become happy. How advanced is my devotee? How much my devotee loves me? So he says, how extraordinary is your relationship? Actually, you are doing everything. You are giving the opportunity for devotional service. You are giving the taste in devotional service. You are giving the inspiration to render devotional service. You are giving the happiness in devotional service. And then you feel grateful when somebody renders devotional service. He says, where can be another master like this? So, this is Krishna. This Krishna has come as Lord Narasimha Dev. And Prahlad Maharaj, his heart is filled with realizations like this and many, many more. And when he's seeing the Lord's love, he feels, what are all these material benedictions? He says, I don't want any of them at all. So later on his prayers go on and he shifts from thinking about himself to thinking about everybody else. And he thinks, my dear Lord, by bhakti I was delivered, but what about the rest of the world? So I desire that you please give bhakti to the rest of the world also. And then he says, Krishna, so first the Lord is telling him, you take material benedictions. He says, no, I don't want material benedictions because they are miserable. They will continue to keep me tied up in material existence. Then the Lord says, okay, you take prema and you come back to me. So he also has said, I want to come back to you. But then he says, no, my dear Lord, how can I come back to you alone? How can I come back to you alone when everybody else is suffering in the material existence? So my dear Lord, what I want is that you give bhakti to everyone and make me an instrument so that I can give bhakti to everyone also. So that it becomes his heart's desire. Please give bhakti to everyone. And that's how he concludes this set of prayers in this chapter. I'll just quickly do the overview of the remaining thing. Then Narasimha Dev says, I am very pleased with you, Prahlad. Please ask for something. And then Prahlad Maharaj says, why, my dear Lord, why are you tempting me like this? You know, he says, Maya was tempting me, and to save myself from Maya, I came to you. If you tempt me, where will I go now? So, if you tempt me, where will I go? Mamam pralobayotpatya satnam kameshu tairvarai. Tatsanga bhito nirvinno mumukshustvam upashrita. To save myself from temptation, I came to you. Then Prahlad Maharaj asks, Narasimha Dev, do you think I am tempting you? He says, no, my dear Lord, you are not tempting me. I am not going to offend you. Actually, you know, you want to demonstrate the characteristics of your devotee to the world. And that's why you are actually doing this. So, therefore you are doing this. And then Prahlad Maharaj says, Prahlad Maharaj says, my dear Lord, actually you simply want to glorify your devotee, but I am not a devotee. And I don't want anything from you because a real servant doesn't want anything from the master. And then, this is the verse which we concluded with. So again, last time the Prahlad Maharaj's conclusion was, my dear Lord, please give bhakti to everyone. This time when Lord is telling, please take something, he says, please accept my obeisances. That is all that I want from you. But Lord says, please take something, Prahlad Maharaj. And then Prahlad Maharaj says that, yes, please deliver my father. And he says, Prahlad, three sapta pita puta. He says, what to speak of you? Three generations are delivered. Don't bother about it. And then the Lord tells him that you please rule. And Prahlad Maharaj says, you please rule the kingdom. And he says, my dear Lord, what offense did I do like this that you are making me the king? So Prahlad Maharaj, the Lord does this. This is not an offense. This is a reward. So first he has said, my dear Lord, please ask for something. So Prahlad says, yes, my dear Lord, if you really want me to ask for something, I'll ask for something. So yes, Narasimhadev is so happy. Please ask for something. So then Prahlad Maharaj says, this is the first time. Second time he asked for Hiranyakashipu's deliverance. He says, please ask for something. Says, yes, my dear Lord, I want to ask that there will be nothing to ask in my heart. So Lord Narasimhadev is so happy, and so Krishna never gets frustrated. But Krishna is frustrated here. Because he wants to do something for the devotee. The devotee is not ready to let him do anything. And then he says, please deliver Narasimhadev. So please deliver Hiranyakashipu. He says, he's already delivered. But for your sake, yes, he will be completely delivered. I assure you about that. And then he says, please rule while remembering me. And if you keep remembering me and keep ruling, then not only will you never become contaminated, but you will bless the whole world. And then he says, then you will rule. He says, how long will I have to rule? I want to come back to you. So Lord says, only for one manvantar. One manvantar for Lord this. So this is actually Yanisha Sarvabhutara. You know, the Lord wants to bless, but the devotee is thinking every blessing to be a burden. One manmantara, I'll have to stay away from you. But then, as a service to the Lord, he accepts this. And finally, when Prahlad Maharaj is installed, so Lord Narasimhadev is there for his installation. And then, he actually, right in front of Prahlad Maharaj only, the small boy is there, Lord Narasimhadev glorifies Prahlad and chastises Brahmaji also. Why do you give troublesome benedictions like this to people? Don't give benedictions like this. And then Lord Narasimhadev disappears. And then Lord Narasimhadev disappears. At that time, Narad Muni comes back and Narad Muni says, Yudhishthira Maharaj, that actually Prahlad Maharaj is the greatest of all devotees. And actually, if you see throughout this, Narad Muni never once says, Prahlad is my disciple. He says that I instructed. I instructed. And he also makes it clear, Chakravarti Pad makes it clear that Hiranyakashipu was performing austerity for thousands of years. So his wife, she felt that I don't want to deliver my child as long as my husband is away. Therefore, Narad Muni gives her a benediction that as long as your husband is away, your child will be in the womb, will not be delivered. So Hiranyakashipu does austerity for thousands of years. All that time, for thousands of years, Prahlad is hearing Krishna Katha from Narad Muni. So Narad Muni has spoken, there's a lot of service he has done. And Hiranyakashipu's thousands of years of tapasya, it ends after just 5 years. At the age of 5, Prahlad defies him, he tries to attack Prahlad and he's killed. So that is how, you know, significant trouble, insignificant happiness. That's how it is in material existence. But just as Prahlad doesn't take any credit, he doesn't think I'm a great devotee, Narad Muni doesn't take any credit, he's my disciple, I did so much for him. And finally, when he ends this pastime, he says, what is the benediction? He says, two benedictions. First is that anybody who hears and glorifies Prahlad Maharaj, that person will develop love following the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. And then that person will soon come back to me. So this is the actual ultimate blessing that we can get. These pastimes give us a glimpse of Krishna's love for all of us and Krishna's love for the world. So we'll recite one prayer to Lord Narasimhadev. That will conclude this class. So this is a prayer, we recited this prayer at the beginning. This prayer which we'll recite is from the Narasimha Kavacha. It describes the beauty of Lord Narasimhadev. So we have Radharani described as Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi. So Prahlad Maharaj described Narasimhadev in terms of Tapta Kanchana. It's a very beautiful prayer. Is it visible or it's too small? What is he telling? He's describing the form of the Lord. Tapta Kanchana Sankasham Pita Nirmala Vasasam. So he says, you are wearing a effulgent yellow garment which is just like the sun. And Indradi Suramaulishtam. So all these devatas are there, but you are far beyond them. And Spuran Manikya Diptibhi. Actually, you are effulgent. So if you see in this prayer also, he primarily focuses on glorifying Lord Narasimhadev, his beauty. So here he is revealing honesty, they are not ferocious but as beautiful. So let's repeat this verse, then we'll conclude. Tapta Kanchana Sankasham Pita Nirmala Vasasam Indradi Suramaulishta Spuran Manikya Diptibhi Shinarsimade Bhagavan Ki Shinarsinha Chaturdashi Mahamahotsav Ki, Shri Prahlad Maharaj Ki, Shri Prabhupad Ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki, Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. So let us take this opportunity.